All right, welcome into episode 81 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcasts. Alongside Jamie Eisner, Craig Morgan, I'm Luke Lipinski. I've got mixed messages on which episode this is. One of them is saying it's the Marcel Hossa. One of them is saying it's the Marian Hossa episode.
They're both out there now. I like it.
Just the Hossa episode.
We'll just call this the Hossa episode in case they have like a third brother we don't know about. All right, so we are 2 to 3 games into each playoff series. It's probably still early to completely jump to any conclusions, but I'm fairly confident that I was wrong about something, really right about something, and I still think the jury's out on the third one, but we'll get into all those.
Yeah, but before we get fully started, I want to eat some crow on two things in particular.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I know.
This is like a new segment.
Don't record this, but I was very wrong about two things.
Okay.
One, the Columbus Blue Jackets being ready for primetime.
Yeah.
And two, and this goes way back to the start of the season, very, 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 very wrong about Alexander Radulov.
Oh, that's
true. I believe I called him a glorified third liner when he signed.
Yeah, I would have forgotten that.
Yep, very, very wrong. Yeah. His the athleticism and skill of the play on that goal he scored last night, not to mention the assists, were out of this world.
If it makes you feel any better, there were reporters in Canada calling him that basically after game one of this series. So that was only 3 or 4 days ago, so don't beat yourself up too much.
How many of the teams you picked to advance are leading their series right now?
I have to go look through that now.
All but two.
You? Actually, I have to mention, by the way, Craig is sitting down and throwing me off.
Well, that would be tied into what I'm about to say.
Why are you breaking the fourth wall?
All but two, yes.
Yeah, okay. And one of them is the one that everybody is down on right now.
Yeah, nobody picked. Anybody's rational picked the Blackhawks to beat Nashville. No. And I picked San Jose to beat Edmonton. Still felt like they were the better team yesterday.
That feels like a 7-game series, doesn't it? That we'll get into each series, series by series, in just a moment. But that feels like a 7-game series, and we'll get into Chicago in a second too.
And you? You're not sure?
I have the Chicago one wrong at the moment, although I still think that can change. And I had the Columbus one wrong, and I'm not thinking that's going to change. Those are the only two I can think of.
Did you pick Edmonton?
Yeah, you and I picked Edmonton. I picked Anaheim, although I thought Calgary would win a game, and now I'm not even sure that's going
to
happen.
Did we sway you to pick Montreal over the Rangers? Did you change your...
Oh, no, I picked the Rangers, too.
And then obviously we have Ottawa, Boston, and Washington, Toronto that's 1-1 right now.
Yeah. I feel like Ottawa, Boston is just going to end tied.
I don't care.
And no one will just know.
No, yeah.
They put that game on.
Is that Ottawa-Boston series still going?
It was on at like 6 in the morning the other day.
I kind of feel bad. I just don't care about Ottawa at all.
That is definitely the Boston. And
it's weird because
they have way more Ottawa than Boston.
Yeah,
they have Boston, someone else.
You guys both have just no... I've brought up Ottawa on this show numerous times, all the way back to the point when Guy Boucher looked like he might be a Coach of the Year candidate. And every time I've been shamed basically away from the microphone. I hope they win just so you guys have to talk about them.
It's just what it is. Like, when I bring up Vancouver and Detroit to actively make fun of them.
Yeah, oh yeah, you do.
I'm not trying to actively make fun of Ottawa. They don't do anything for me. I'm not excited by that team.
That Erik Karlsson pass that you guys probably both didn't see to set up the was it the game? It wasn't the game winner. It was the game tire against Boston in game two.
Oh, I saw it, actually.
Yeah, it was pretty nice.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
That was a spectacular play.
All right, so let's hit a couple of news items before we get into series by series. Let's start with coaches. Last week we did the show. We had 6 NHL teams that didn't officially have coaches. 3 of them have coaches. In fact, I believe they all hired them within 10 minutes of our recording ending last week. So... the Islanders kept Doug Weight, which I don't think was a huge shock.
Was the easy and correct decision.
Already deemed the correct decision by Jamie Eisner. Dallas went out and got Ken Hitchcock, which just seems like something Dallas would do. Thoughts on Ken?
I'm curious how that one's going to work out. You know, I know people believe that they need to play. You can't really argue that they have to play better defense. They have to do a better job of keeping the puck out of their net, but... is he the answer? I wonder about these retreads. We just keep seeing coaches recycled over and over again. Is his message going to play with that particular group? I'm not sure.
It does sort of feel like a team that probably still thinks they're right there. Maybe they are, if they can do something about their goaltending, to at least be a team that can make the playoffs and be dangerous. So in that's the only scenario where Ken Hitchcock makes any sense.
Sure, maybe that's what you're thinking. We have some... players that if we could get them into the playoffs, maybe they can do some damage, and maybe Hitch is the guy to do that, to spur them to at least the postseason. But in some ways, this hire just feels simplistic. we need to be a better defensive team. Oh, let's go get Ken Hitchcock. It doesn't feel terribly nuanced. You look like you're dying to say something.
No, it's just I don't understand it. I guess it's saying we have to make a run here in the next year or two, so we're going to take a known commodity over a younger coach or a different coach that could maybe bring guys up. I don't get it. You have a coach that you, best case scenario, 1 or 2 years maybe, somebody who wanted to retire, now doesn't want to retire because of the way things ended in St. Louis. I just don't – this doesn't make sense to me.
It does sort of say that they're still going for it, right? I mean, we've been talking about them for the last month as maybe being a team that almost has to not rebuild, but sort of re-examine everything next year and start building for the future a little bit. Not long-term, but maybe they're 2 years away from doing any damage with those goalies still locked in.
Right.
You can go out and get Ken Hitchcock for that.
Sorry, but a bunch of veterans coming off the books, too. So they probably are thinking that they might be able to tweak some things, but yeah, you're right. They're a little hamstrung. In some ways, it feels like L.A. to me. Okay, we've got this small core of guys that we still feel like we can build around and push it back to the playoffs really soon, but I don't know. Do you have enough maneuverability within the cap to actually do that? That's the big question, I guess.
They have to address goaltending, and I still don't know how they do it.
Wait, are we talking about Dallas or Winnipeg?
Dallas.
Okay.
There's no need to talk about Winnipeg.
They can't
today.
Address it this coming season. What are they going
to
do?
No, they and that's unless I really don't know. I you're to the point now if you're Dallas where your only potential trade partner is Pittsburgh because you can just say you have to take one of these goalies.
What sort of cap relief do you get if a goaltender experiences an untimely death?
I don't think that'll help.
I don't know what you're suggesting,
nothing at all. Just wondering out loud.
Hmm.
I think you have to ask Dean Lombardi how you get out of contracts you've already signed.
Wow. We're going down various paths. I'm going to steer us back to Vegas because that's much cleaner. And that's the only time that sentence has ever been said.
Wow. Okay.
Gerard Gallant, Vegas. We all sort of expected this when Florida left him on a street corner a few months ago, correct?
Yeah.
With hefty bags.
The only way to travel. I like it. I like it for Vegas. I do.
Yeah. I think it's fine. I don't think it's, oh my God, what an amazing hire.
Have you considered doing PR for Vegas, Jamie? And now with a fine hire that's not going to
fire anybody. Yeah, this was fine. Hire pending.
Now they have Gallant and Reed Duke.
Glad we kept them away from LA. I guess that's what, I mean, right? That's what they did. That's why they waited. They could have hired him 3 months ago.
Gerard Gallant is a... we don't even know what the makeup of the roster is going to be yet, so it's hard to even ask.
They have one player.
Why do you think that he's the right guy? But if you're thinking about a guy who's a teacher, is he the guy that comes to mind first for you?
No. But I don't – it's such a weird – I was more in favor of going with a – I guess maybe they want to compete. I put that in air quotes
they
right
put
away.
That in like 20 air quotes.
As the NHL wants to tell us how competitive Vegas is going to be in year one.
No.
They want to compete early, but I thought you would go with a younger coach that would grow with the team that will at some point have more than one player.
Or be easy to fire with year or two of his contract because he's not worth much.
Yeah.
Or but somebody who can relate to young players,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
they have good cabs in
it's
Vegas.
It's not like, we're going to pick up all these veteran players and we need a coach who knows how to cook. It doesn't matter because those veteran players are going to be garbage.
Yeah.
Your team's going to be garbage regardless of what the league is saying. So think about your youth. Think about the importance of that.
Yeah.
And that's the lens I would view this through.
I just thought you would hire a coach that you didn't intend to fire in the first 3 years. And I heard him ask that, actually.
They were like, how stable do you feel with this job? Like, are you going to be the guy that's just the transition until you start to get good? And he's like, I hope not.
I mean, I've used this term before, but with the Canucks, but I don't think that by the time they make the playoffs again, it will be with a different coach. I think they're that far away, and I don't think they're going to give anybody the John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan window of, oh, yeah, you can do whatever you want for half a decade and see what happens.
So if you were the coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, would you just live? Like in a suite in a casino.
Just out, like in the MGM.
What's the Aria? Yeah. I'd probably go for the Aria.
Even closer, right? Yeah. Or New York's right there.
Yeah, New York's right there.
They have those condos in like the Cosmopolitan.
But a severe lack of poker tables at New York. So that might be a downgrade.
It's very odd. By severe, you mean 100%
yes.
lack. It's very weird. A couple things.
It's interesting that both of you know that.
On Vegas. Oh, we're just both on Wikipedia now.
Right.
Have you seen the Vegas commercial with Reed Duke playing soccer? It's the best commercial ever.
Yes.
I've seen that. It is fantastic. I don't I don't know what else they could have really done. I think we can agree that the best player on Vegas next year is playing in this Anaheim-Calgary game tonight, right? I mean, just the more I watch this.
No, he's the guy that's not playing in the Pittsburgh-Columbus series.
Right.
Well, yeah, fine. The best skater in this on Vegas next year is one of the guys on Anaheim. The more I watch Silverberg and Raquel play, I'm thinking they're going to have to let some defensemen go. And they have a billion of them, it feels like, in Anaheim. So that's it for Vegas. Any thoughts on these final three teams that need coaches before we start getting the teams that are still playing? Vancouver, L.A.?
Think outside the box.
Is anybody going to take the Florida job?
I'm surprised they didn't hire Gerard Gallant.
Maybe they'll get Willie Desjardins.
Maybe they will, see? Who knows? Is Bielsma keeping his job, by the way? What's happening?
Yeah,
I have no idea
what's going on there.
Buffalo's already talking about wanting Lindy Ruff back, and they still have a coach, so that's problematic.
Unless they want to make him a coach in waiting further down the bench.
Yeah.
That's true. That is a new position. It's like the 10th assistant in college football now, yes. Right?
Good Lord. If I asked you to guess, if I told you one of these guys is not coaching their current NHL team next year, and I said Dan Bielsma or Paul Maurice, which one are you going with?
Flip a coin.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go Bielsma because I think, again, Winnipeg's problem is very easy to identify. Their biggest problem. Buffalo's not so much. Why they can't score, I still
don't
fully
know. Sounds like there are chemistry issues there, too. Maybe chemistry issues. So that's never good for a coach.
And it doesn't sound like those chemistry issues are Evander Kane's fault, because I know that's what everybody's immediately going to point to.
It sounds like they're the coach's fault.
And he's easily.
But if Winnipeg gets 3 hot months of goaltending, they're a playoff team.
That sounds like a book, like a Canadian book. Three hot months of goaltending. The Yaroslav Halak story.
That could be the title of our podcast today.
3 hot months of goaltending. All right, and then Vancouver, they may not play with the coach next year.
All the open jobs are bad.
Do you want the Vancouver job?
No.
Are you asking him or me?
You can live in that city, so there's that.
It's a beautiful city.
It's an amazing city.
By the way, I don't know who's calling me, but...
Probably Vancouver.
It just says, scam likely.
Yep, that's the Canucks. Answer it. You could be the next coach.
Yeah, it could be an interview.
Scam likely.
That just... Interesting.
Aren't you kind of curious right now?
A little bit, but not that much.
Just answer and don't even say hello. Just start rattling off your credit card number and see what happens.
Just give my social, my address.
They'll be like, this is the easiest call ever. NHL Draft Lottery is coming up on April 29th, so not even 2 weeks away. Get ready for that. It's going to be awkward when I had somebody suggest to me yesterday, and this is kind of cool. They usually do it during the intermission of a game, correct? Or like right in the pregame leading up to a game.
Yeah, I think the McDavid one was pregame.
So when the Oilers somehow win the lottery in the intermission of their own playoff game, that's going to be fantastic. Why wouldn't they just put one ping pong ball in there and just have the Canucks logo on it? And so when it pops up, it's like Vancouver wins.
The entire bin could be one ping pong ball with the Canucks logo on it. We're not even going to kid you here. We're giving it to yet another Canadian team. Yes, that's what we're going to do.
Hey, look which one came up. Vancouver! They're just holding it. It's giant above his head.
Is that ball abnormally large?
Not a whole lot to say about this other than just a reminder to people that it's coming up, because I've noticed a lot of people seem to think it's happening after the draft.
There are like 5 centers at the top of this draft. I mean, I think Nolan Patrick is pretty clearly the number one pick, in spite of, I know people are still pushing Hsieh as number one pick.
It's that time of year.
Patrick will go number one.
It's that time of year.
Yes. But beyond that, I mean, like 2 through 15, who knows? Who knows what happens?
What team winning the lottery would annoy the most people? Is it Vegas this year? Would that be the one that everyone goes, oh, okay. We get what you're doing, NHL.
Let's see.
I think LA would bother some people.
Yeah. LA would really bug people. That's probably
LA's the one that should bug the most people.
I think the one that would bother me the most is Buffalo, because it just would with the way they handled themselves a couple years ago. But, yeah, it's probably
actually
LA.
Tanking, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Say that on here? Yes, yeah. Everyone was involved.
Didn't they say that, basically?
Except the players who were just removed from the lineup when they had success.
Nice
traded
goal.
When they had success.
Traded, yeah.
See in the AHL. The odds for the top five, Colorado's 18%, Vancouver 12.1%, Vegas and Arizona both 10.3%, and New Jersey 8.5%. I say that just as a way to remind everybody that freaked out on me when the Coyotes won a couple games at the end of the year. They
so
moved
it's like
down
4%. Not
no
1.8%. It's not the NBA. Right. It's very minimal.
You're right, and so many people freak out about it. They've blown it. They've blown their draft position. The difference is minimal.
I mean, I guess if all three of the top picks aren't, like, if they somehow move down to seven, that wouldn't be great. But come on. Like, if that happens, then you would have been sixth. Like, what's the deal? 1.8% is not... People just treat these lotteries like it's the NFL, where you're just slotted wherever you finish, yeah. And that's so not the case. All right.
Vancouver tanked, too. Can we just say that, too?
They tanked
at the end of the season.
I think they just played to their potential at the end of the season. they did what they were supposed to be doing all year long. All right.
Played to their coaching, too.
Zach Werenski's out for the year. One parting shot on Willie Desjardins. He's probably listening to the show now.
Nice guy.
Is he? I've never met him.
Awful coach. Yeah.
Maybe he was just in a bad situation. That was not the best spot.
That's it.
No? Okay.
Should have taken the Pittsburgh job.
Good, yeah, good combination of both.
Yeah, I like the way it worked out.
Yeah. Wouldn't be in the playoffs right now, would you?
But they would have still fired him last year for Mike Sullivan. It's just a matter of who you're firing.
We'll get to that in a minute, too.
All right, so are we starting with
Zach Werenski? We have to after that.
Yeah.
Awesome photo he tweeted.
I will say this. The coolest part of that photo was I didn't see any negative comments. Like, if you start to scroll down the comments, everybody, no matter what... I mean, I saw Rangers fans, I saw Penguins fans all talking about how he's their new favorite player that's not on their team or whatever, just how intense he is and how they want him to come back. The first two comments were about how he's a great Canadian, and then somebody said he's not Canadian, and then that turned into an argument. But everything about him was a
Someone
ton of respect.
Told me he's Canadian, though, and I believed it. Just like I believe that there's a rule 206C in the NHL rule book. We'll get to that in a minute, too.
Which I believe the rule book ends at like 91.
Doesn't even go close. Doesn't even get into 100.
Yeah, you know.
People tweeting out rule 206C. And I think it's just one person throws it out and then everybody
cares. Yeah, like, oh, wow.
That's the rule. Wait, no, it's not.
It's really just a matter of what you can say first online.
Well, people just start Googling rules.
Yeah, hockey rules.
Oh, I found hockey rules. This must apply to the NHL, right?
The KHL says.
Roller Hockey International, circa 1998.
It's from the USA Hockey Rulebook. I found it, like, wondering where the heck this came from. It's from the USA Hockey Rulebook.
So do you want to explain what you're raging on right now?
Yeah, well, when Werenski took that puck to the face, there were a lot of Columbus fans who thought play should have been stopped immediately because he was injured. Well, that's not what the NHL Rulebook says. It says you have to have possession of the puck for it to change. The thinking, of course, is... somebody could fake an injury during a scoring opportunity, and they could prevent that scoring opportunity. Now, when someone takes a puck to the face, it's pretty obvious that he's probably hurt. And you can definitely question the wisdom of the NHL rule that says, wait till possession changes when a guy's lying face down on the ice. Is that really what you want to do for a league that says it cares about player safety? Probably not, but hey, hypocrisy in the NHL, they go hand in hand. Regardless, they did. The officials on the ice made the correct call.
Two things on that. First of all, the second you said this could be a player just faking an injury on the ice, I guarantee you everybody listening has a player they thought of in their mind. Right.
Brett Murphy, and I'm sorry,
what? Sidney Crosby.
See, I was thinking it was more Dustin Brown, but whatever.
Oh, there's that too.
Secondly, do you think they changed that rule? Because that's a rule that I've long not liked, and yesterday it obviously played a huge role in the game.
No, because I don't know what you change it to. I mean, there are some things that have to be in sports up to the discretion of the referees on the ice, on the field. Because you can't say, well, okay, what happens if a guy just, you know, takes a high stick from his own teammate? What happens if a guy just takes a high stick? There are so many different things that kind of go into it. How do you determine what an injury is? Is it just hitting the ice? What guys hit the ice all the time to block a shot?
And he's moving, too. You can see Zach Werenski is moving. While the play is going, he's not motionless, limp on the ice.
But he's bleeding.
Also,
well, they couldn't see the blood, though, because it's concealed.
If he were 10 feet closer to the net, they probably would have stopped play. Mm-hmm. But he's back closer, not on, but closer to the blue line, and the play is in front of the net. You know, if that puck comes out to the point, maybe they close off the play at that point. It's tough, but you have to leave that up to the referees because it gets... into a mess. A guy goes down to block a shot. It's a little slow to get up because it hit him in the ribs. We just stop play.
Right. Yeah, it's not the first time we've seen it. It's just the first time we saw it on this stage.
That is the rule. And again, that's Aaron Porcelain, who covers the Columbus Blue Jackets, tweeted the rule from the NHL rulebook. Took a screenshot, tweeted it out, and then people are calling him idiots because he didn't follow this other rule, which is from the USA Hockey rulebook.
He
even went and asked Don Karski. He did all that he could as a reporter to see if he had this covered, and still people were angry with him and thought play should have been stopped. No, you're wrong.
I tend to defer to Aaron Portsline when it's between him and randos on the internet.
Know the rules. Just know the rules. And then don't take everything that you see on the internet as gospel.
Really? Isn't this show on the internet?
It was just amusing to watch that whole exchange. So many people were wrong. Getting angry. Just
defiantly wrong,
yes,
too.
Yes, defiantly wrong.
This is the series where I was the most wrong. And I... Columbus hasn't... I just don't understand what Columbus is doing. I thought... I mean, they looked great in Game 3 to start that game off. I'm especially stunned they lost that game. The way they started it in their building and just the way they were buzzing around.
Yeah,
and
Cam Atkinson saying we're going to win, then scoring twice in the first 6 minutes of the game.
Yeah, like he did all he could do.
Whatever it was.
Won in like the first 10 seconds, it felt like.
Yeah, and this is something that I don't remember if, Luke, you had the privilege of being on this group text or not, if it was just between me and Craig.
You guys have a separate group text?
I think we excluded him on that
one.
Oh, I didn't know you guys had one.
One of the themes of this postseason so far has been how do young teams who get early leads continue
to play? You accidentally sent me that. I saw it.
Damn, I'll make sure I'll change that next time.
Just block my number.
But,
it's easier.
But that is... But that, aren't you a scam likely? You just called me?
Yeah, I'm calling you again.
But that's something that we have to see in the maturation process of young players. Okay, you have a 3-1 lead in the first period. You're going up against the defending Stanley Cup champions. How do you play with that 3-1 lead? And for the most part, a lot of these young teams have not been able to play with that lead.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely part of this. But let's just acknowledge the other part of this.
Yeah, that pick's really good.
Good Lord, Pittsburgh looks so good in this series. They look so good. And Sidney Crosby's setup on the game-winning goal.
That was ridiculous.
It just reversed course twice behind the net. Because, you know, there's a lot of room to work there with guys trying to take the puck away from on either side of him. And he maintained control. And there's Jake Gensel. Did Jake Gensel move the entire time? I think it was just like a tripod just waiting. Okay, I know he's going to get me the puck. I know he's going to get me the puck. And he did.
It's if you watch, there's an angle of that shot that I saw this morning because I've just been watching it on a loop for the last 16 hours. There's one angle where it looks like nobody's moving. It
you
looks like Columbus'
don't know
D are just watching.
Often wears this virtual reality thing around. He likes to watch the Penguins.
You know,
it has him when he drives, but...
You know the Toronto Maple Leafs fan that was with the cigarette in his mouth? That's Luke. Awesome. Just think that and like face paint.
These are all lies, is what these are.
They can't see.
I guess that's true.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know.
You could make up anything. No. Yeah. They don't know what I have to deal with. Actually, I think they're getting a pretty good feel for what I have to deal with. Columbus, I don't understand the logic of just really focusing on hitting, which I felt like they did in the first two games. Like that was their whole game plan.
Can we talk about how? As much as lack of self-awareness the Bruce Boudreau quote was from yesterday or 2 days ago, the quote from Tortorella about their winning streak and getting away from where they were, from who they are during their 17-game winning streak.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I saw it, but I didn't hear him say it. I just saw it written down.
We want to get back to who we were last season.
Yeah, let's get back. Okay. We didn't do something during our 17-game winning streak. So let's get back to that. No.
No time like
the
present.
Do the things you did well in your 17-game winning streak, maybe.
That's a team that was scoring. I mean, how many times did we see them score 7, 6, 8, 10 goals in a game this season? I mean, Columbus can – that's where I thought that game was going yesterday when it was 3-1 in the first 6 minutes.
It did feel like it.
I will say the I probably underestimated Pittsburgh's experience coming into play, but really what it seems to be – is they're just so different with Mike Sullivan. Because if you look at their stretch over the last few years, last year they won the Cup. The year before, they were out in five games. They didn't have Letang. Fleury actually played well against the Rangers 2 years ago when they went out in five games. They just couldn't move the puck up the ice. But Sullivan they just find different ways to score. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, look, Crosby's line mates have a combined 101 games of NHL experience, but they've been really good with him all year long. And that's... Connor Sheary and Jake Gensel.
Jake Gensel had a hat trick yesterday.
But he has been good all year. He's a rookie, but he has been good all year.
He's a rookie. It's just crazy.
He's leading the NHL, isn't he, in goals in the playoffs? He has to be. And I also don't understand the logic. And I don't. Some teams get this and some teams don't. If Malkin's not doing anything, don't try and hit him and get him angry. If he's not doing anything, he's coming back from an injury, he'll just float around the ice for a series. Once you start taking shots at him, he wakes up, and now he leads the team with 6 points. There's ways to beat Pittsburgh, and Columbus is doing none of them.
No. And teams, by the way, teams that have out-hit their other teams in this postseason, 6-14.
Yeah,
stop it.
Keep focusing on that.
Yeah, focus on the puck. Jake Gensel, by the way, as a couple sites tweeted out yesterday, the second rookie in NHL postseason history with a hat trick plus an OT goal in the same game. So, pretty cool.
Not bad.
Some guy named Jerry I can't even pronounce the last name. Plamondon.
Bruckheimer.
1949 Canadiens.
That was the last time it happened?
Yep.
This goes back to my point I've made on this podcast before. The value, if you can do it, of having your AHL coach, your next coach in line, because Sullivan's worked with all these guys, and it's not just Guentzel. Like, last year it was Brian Rust, and it was Connor Sheary, and it was obviously Matt Murray, and Rust has been huge again this year, and none of these guys were high draft picks.
Why do that when you can hire Ken Hitchcock or Lindy Ruff?
Yeah, when retreads.
You do make a good point. I guess I can't argue that.
And it worked for the team they played in the Eastern Conference Final last year, too.
Yeah, I guess that's not true. Okay. Well, anything else on Columbus? Sergei Bobrovsky's given up 12 goals in 3 games. I'm not even really sure they've all been his fault.
No.
Pittsburgh's been phenomenal around the net. You need your goaltender to... He's arguably their best player, is their best player, so you need him to play like it. He hasn't, but Pittsburgh's just been so good in this series. And by the way, that game was so much better than the other 3 games played yesterday. It was ridiculous. Watch that, and then you try and tune to these other games, and it's just, oh my God, it was like a slog fest. Watching Edmonton play, it was boring. Edmonton-San Jose was a boring game.
Yeah.
That's definitely a game yesterday that Pittsburgh would have lost 2 years ago. That's the story. And I was texting with Craig. Maybe I cut Jamie out of that one. I think you were in on that. That we both have separate text threads with Craig.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think maybe it's his fault. That was the sort of game where 2 years
that
ago.
One thing you said?
2 years ago, there was more than one. They lose that game, and then they lose 2 more, and they just fall apart.
Yeah, you were waiting for Marc-Andre Fleury to collapse after the 3rd goal.
Yes.
You're like, this is going, you were looking like 5 games down the road when he gave up the 3rd goal.
But I have, you would give me this, I have 4 years of...
that you're an insane Penguins fan.
I have 4 years of playoff experience to work with where Fleury gives up a goal, and they lose 4 in a row. This has happened. It happened in 2010, 11, 12, 13. I mean, it wasn't 4 in a row every year, but... When Fleury had a bad game in the past, it wasn't, all right, that was a rough period. They lose multiple games before they can recover.
They're sweeping now, aren't they, with Werenski out
for
the rest of the postseason?
I never call a sweep, but it felt like yesterday was the game for Columbus to win.
I hate to say this, but I'm going to preface this with, I have literally nothing to back this up.
Wow.
But I just want, this is a gut feeling, and I'm interested to see if I can find statistical backing on this. I feel like when teams are down 2-0, that game 3 is the game that's more likely for the home team to come back home and win than if they go down 3-0 and to win that 4th game.
No matter how much you can say, we still have to treat this like a game 7, as some people said yesterday.
Jeez.
Once you're down 3-0, look, you're so fragile emotionally. If anything goes wrong in game 4, you're done. You're probably done anyway before the puck drops.
And the other thing is, 2 games, you never want to be down 2-0, but 2-0 is manageable. Like, we see NHL teams come back from this, I feel like, a couple every year.
You haven't played on your own ice yet. I mean, you can tell yourself all those things up until you lose game 3.
Right.
Well, 3-0 is a lot different. Although we have seen NHL teams do that, at least.
Not many.
But compared to the other sports, I mean, we never see it in the other sports. But 2-0 is very doable.
I completely agree. And since we're going to talk about Chicago-Nashville soon, even though the Blackhawks have to go on the road, they're the type of team that could come back from that sort of deficit. But when you look at these 2 teams, and it's 3-0 now, but Minnesota's so fragile anyway. The way they finished the season, their history, Bruce Boudreau's history, there's no way they're coming back. And Columbus is playing the defending Stanley Cup champions who are on top of their game despite their injury situation. There's no way they're coming back.
You know how difficult it is to say this about the team that you like winning, to sit there and call them winning a series, but it wouldn't shock me if Columbus wins game 4, and they're good enough where they could win game 5, but I can't see this Pittsburgh team, unless there's another injury, in years past, they would lose a game and they would start to fall apart. Now they're a team that, as the series goes, they get stronger. And I keep coming back to Sullivan, because he's the only thing that's really changed, other than the fact that I think Crosby has matured as a player in the last 2 years. So, do you want to get to Chicago right now, or are we just going to bounce between the conferences?
Sure. Can we start with that incredible column in the Tennessean that was masquerading as journalism?
Yes. Wow. Why don't we let you run with this one?
I don't know if people are familiar with it, but the idea behind it was, the headline is, why Predators fans are superior to Blackhawks bandwagon jumpers. So many problems with this column. First of all, this is a professional newspaper with this trash, utter trash. And it was the lead story in the Tennessean that day. Just absolute garbage. We could, We can also mention that it's a Gannett newspaper.
It's because a Gannett's finest.
Affinity for Gannett.
The views expressed within this show.
That I worked for at some point in my career.
Oh, okay.
But why in the world would you put this trash in your newspaper? It's so amateurish. It's so homerish. It's embarrassing is what it is.
It does feel a little bloggish. It's and not like regulated blog, just like I started my own blog and I don't like this team.
It's a weird column to see in print. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can go. There are a lot of ways you can go with columns, but that was just a very weird thing just to be out there. It doesn't feel like somebody that's done by a journalist or.
Right.
It feels like something that was. I sent this into the newspaper so they can put it on their.
This felt like student newspaper-ish.
It did.
Yeah.
Very very much. That's a great way to describe it. It very much did.
Also,
the timing
makes
very little sense.
Well, those are the two things. I haven't read it yet, but I feel like there is a way where you can write something that just talks about how your fan base has been. I haven't read it at all. I've just seen the headline. But I'm sure there was a way to write, hey, Nashville fans, you've been long-suffering. You're a great fan base. You probably get overlooked because you live somewhere where it's warm, so everybody assumes you don't know anything. But you don't need to attack the fan base that you're going up against. And it's two games.
Or if you're going to do it. It's a line in the story. You say something. You haven't had it as easy over the years as New York Yankees fans, as Golden State Warrior fan. You know, you can make that comparison of these franchises that have had a lot of success have large fan bases in part because of the amount of success that they have. That's not the lead of your story. It's not your headline.
Nobody questions that the Blackhawks have bandwagon fans. I mean, any team that's winning has a ton of bandwagon fans.
That's the first point.
Is Chicago not a good sports city?
Right, yeah. His major point at the end of the column was that don't pretend you've been here all along, because there was a time when Chicago United Center was, you know, two-thirds empty or one-third empty.
And Bridgestone Arena wasn't?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. Let's start with that premise that Nashville fans are so great. Nashville's 20th in the NHL in attendance. So let's start right there. So let's come with facts. If you're going to make this story, use facts to support your argument, not just your feeling or anecdotal experience, which is just absurd for somebody, again, at a professional newspaper. Right?
Yeah, I haven't
then,
stopped you yet.
If you're going to look at the Blackhawks for those few years where their attendance was garbage, which it was, I was in the building then too, there are extenuating circumstances, because if you go back even before that, when they still had garbage teams for a very long time, Chicago Stadium and United Center initially were still sold out. There was really bad blood between ownership and the city. William Wirtz, before Rocky took over, had a really bad relationship with that city, alienated the fan base. There was much more behind it than just the team is garbage.
You couldn't watch a lot of the games, correct?
Correct. He kept it
That's
off
an
local
issue.
Television.
Yeah. I mean, and also,
for the longest time, he had this old school mentality. People need to come to the games. It's that NHL mentality of attendance matters. It's everything.
And again, it's one of those things where even if it was mostly attendance or record-based, that goes for every team in professional sports.
Yeah.
Especially nowadays, where you have so many different outlets in which you can watch teams for free. But to me, again, goes back to when in 2010, and I saw this a little bit with Coyotes fans of being, and the ones that were there all the time, season ticket holders, being upset at, well, these bandwagon fans now want to join our team now. If you're a team like Nashville.
That's a good thing.
If you're a team like Phoenix.
That's where you're going.
You need those fans.
Yes, you do. And every
their
as,
money
I think it
was counts
Mark Lazarus
the same.
From the Sun-Times who said this. Every fan has a sort of a birth experience, right, when they first became a fan. That's okay. You don't have to have been with the team 20 years ago. It doesn't matter if you join on.
And
you know what?
Their money counts the same,
yes,
doesn't it?
Exactly. And here's the other truth. Those bandwagon fans, they just might be smarter than you, who stuck by your team when it was garbage. Because we celebrate, we hear from players, we hear from executives, we hear from coaches that it's a business, that's just the reality of it. We celebrate people who invest well. Well, what are you investing in? A team that just puts garbage on the ice every year and you're still investing? Maybe you're not so smart. Maybe the bandwagon fan is smarter than you. Consider that possibility.
But the reality is, the bandwagon fan is what keeps sports owners
it's
in
it's what
line.
They're marketing to.
It's why they improve the team.
Yes.
But I like the fan that's loyal and sits
I
through
do too.
All the
Listen,
garbage.
That's me. I've been that way my whole life. But
I think that's all
I get the argument for bandwagon fans too. Why should I spend my dollars on a garbage product year after year. There's validity behind that argument. Why should someone be counted on to just come out and support the bad team every year that's not doing what it can to be better?
This is the caveat, though. And I'm just speaking from a fan's perspective. If I have stuck by my team, if I was watching the Penguins in the early 2000s when Milan Kraft was taking penalty shots and falling down on a penalty shot, and the Penguins were winning 10 games a year, it felt like. That's, yeah. Like, waiting all 2 years to work that in.
Now. Wow.
No, but if I've stuck by my team and they've been terrible, I mean, Phoenix Suns fans can relate to this in this town. I guess every team right now.
Not
in
the
this
past
town.
Tense, though.
But if you're going to step in as a bandwagon fan of the other team, I think there are certain rules that once you break them, people are going to come after you.
If you're
a bandwagon fan that's loud and just constantly in everybody's face about how great of a fan you are, you're going to get a reaction.
I understand. The reaction, because I think all three of us fall into the, we're going to watch our favorite teams, whether they lose all their games or win all their games. I understand.
I'm wearing a Mariners shirt. Come on.
Well, Mitch Haniger's playing well. I understand the initial reaction to be like, hey, screw you. I've been here this whole time. Why do you get all the same rewards, air quotes, as I get.
Are you talking within the same fan? Like, if you're both cheering?
Yes.
See, I'm talking if somebody comes in from another town that wasn't following that team and they're
in your face about it. In that environment,
you know that they haven't been following
you. Don't.
So? That's the
you
thing.
Don't.
That's the other part of this. You see fan bases labeling other fan bases. Oh, that's a bandwagon fan. You don't know. You don't have the information to even form that judgment. So shut up.
Yeah, to me, I understand the initial reaction to be upset about it, but the reality is that fan is why your general manager and your owner want to improve your team.
Yep.
Because if you're already in the building, they got you.
And you might be a sucker.
They got me. So,
you might be a sucker.
I feel like a lot of teams have gotten me over the years now. Well,
I'm in the boat too, so.
But the reality
is, I'm one of those suckers.
What's the incentive to get better if not to, A, make more money on both, like for playoff games on ice, and also from fan bases and merchandise and ticket sales. That's what drives them. If you just show up all the time.
But you and I are talking about two different things.
What was the narrative in Chicago for years with the Cubs?
It's the same with the Blackhawks, though. It's more applicable to what we're talking about. That's part of the story behind the Blackhawks drop in attendance. Blackhawk fans were taken for granted. Wirtz took them for granted because they kept showing up for a team that didn't do anything in the playoffs. And then they finally stopped showing up. Rocky steps in and is like, whoa, what the heck have we done with this incredible franchise and this incredible fan base? And
that
now
wants
look where
to
they
come
are.
To games.
Yes, they want to support this team.
But there
We've
are
done
times.
Everything possible to alienate them.
There are times when you do know. Like, the Cubs won the World Series last year, and I know plenty of people here that were Diamondbacks fans. And again, I'm not a Diamondbacks fan or a Cubs fan, and I don't really care ultimately who wins because I will once again reference the shirt I'm wearing of a team that's never been close to the World Series. Diamondbacks fans that were in everybody's face about the Cubs winning. Do whatever you want. It's sports. It's supposed to be fun. But just know that when you do that, people are going to have a reaction. Now, I don't know how that relates to this.
If you're a jerk, you're a jerk. And I doubt those people I doubt those people all of a sudden change their personality just because the Cubs won. I bet you they were doing that in other walks of life, and now they just chose to jump on the Cubs as a conduit to other people to be jerks to.
That might actually be the best way anybody could possibly summarize this. And I don't know. I mean, I know there is a rally or a rivalry between Nashville and Chicago, but I didn't realize it went
this deep. There's a one-way rivalry.
Yeah, you know, I guess hatred between
and
fans.
That's the other element of this that we haven't even talked about yet. You know what most of this is? It's jealousy. Mm-hmm. Nashville is jealous of Chicago. That's the truth of it, because the Blackhawks have 3 Stanley Cups in the last 7 years, and Nashville hasn't even sniffed a Stanley Cup.
And, as Jamie sort of alluded to earlier, and I will jump in now to bring it back to the series, it's 2-0.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Oh, you didn't want...
It's not over.
I wanted to lead to this column.
Oh, go ahead.
The first paragraph of this column is, for lack of a better word that would be appropriate in this forum, let's go with doofuses to describe these Chicago Blackhawks fans. Okay. You are a professional journalist and a columnist for the biggest paper in town.
Is he talking about all Blackhawks fans, or is
no,
he talking,
he's talking
about a
about
subset?
That segment of bandwagon fans that he's labeled unscientifically again.
What's the name of the article specifically?
The headline is "Why Predators Fans Are Superior to Blackhawk Bandwagon Jumpers."
Okay.
Yeah. So let's move on to the series now.
I'm sure all those people, all those Predators fans, were born and grew up Predators fans.
Yes, of course. There's no bandwagon fans in Nashville.
By the way,
their 20th ranked fan base.
Also, by the way, if Chicago wins game three,
they win the series.
Do we not completely change our mind on everything we're thinking right now?
Not yet.
I think they win the series.
If they win game three, I think they got a really good chance, even if they lose game four, because two of the next three are at home. But, yeah, they have to win tonight.
I just feel like the whole narrative of this series shifts completely if Chicago wins, in any capacity, game three.
I think it's been so... I don't know if it's... I don't want to get philosophical. I don't know if it's the social media that's out there, if it's just the generation we live in or whatever, but this year's playoffs seem so just knee-jerk reaction. After game one, all these teams were out. All of a sudden, it's a best of one. And then all of a sudden, hey, Montreal won game two, or the Rangers are done, and Edmonton won game two, so San Jose's done. Everybody is writing Chicago off. If they win game three, they win the series.
What a dangerous thing to do with this team of all teams, to write them off.
How many times have we seen them win four in a row before?
No doubt they're in trouble. They haven't scored a goal yet in this series.
That's concerning.
But to me, they're in trouble, and you have to take that into account. But
look at their history.
This is not aggregate. This isn't soccer. It doesn't matter that they didn't score the first two goals. If they score five goals in the next two games, guess what? It's going to be a 2-2 series.
If they go into Nashville and win tonight 5-2, is anybody picking against Chicago in this series?
All the pressure shifts to Nashville, and that's
crazy.
They can't handle it, isn't it? I'm not sure they can. Maybe they can. Maybe this is the next step in their evolution. Look, we all talked at the start of the year about this team being a potential entrant in the Stanley Cup Finals. They could win the West. They could win the Central Division. They have the pieces.
I thought they'd win the Central.
They could be this good. Look at that blue line. Is there a better blue line in the NHL than what Nashville has?
No.
It's really good. So fine. That's a really important part. I mean, with center
and blue
line.
That's their advantage over Chicago.
Yeah, and Pecorine is playing like the old Pecorine. So, okay, that's another thing that maybe we didn't expect here. So if you're getting great goaltending, you have a fantastic blue line, and we know they have some pieces up front. Maybe they are capable
of
doing this.
Well, and as somebody wrote for FanRagSports.com, the Predators, through the first two games, will look like exactly like the team we thought they were going to be when the season began.
I don't know either.
Who else is writing about this series? Oh, it's you.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that. Yeah. An elaborate setup for your own story.
Craig was very nice to air quotes, ask to cover this series. Like, A, one, he wasn't going to do it anyway, and B, that we wouldn't have him do it anyway.
He was just going to start his own
blog.
But
he was nice. Yeah, he went through the formalities. Right.
That was nice. That was very pleasant.
CraigsMorgan.com if you want to read stories about the Blackhawks during the playoffs.
Is that a real website? There's going to be some dude out there.
Not.
It's like a real estate agent in Iowa.
No, we're talking about the country music singer.
Oh, ooh,
that's right. I get that all the time.
Just so people
know.
People
who follow me and they're like, oh.
Oh, yeah, this is hockey. Yeah.
For people.
I don't know if there's. No, with all due respect to Nashville, I don't know if there's a lot of crossover between those Craig Morgan fans and this Craig Morgan.
Well, just to be clear, people have listened to 80 and a half episodes. This is not Craig Morgan, the country singer.
I should adopt that avatar for this series.
Yeah.
I'm writing my stories, and then people see his avatar, boom.
I'd be all your national stories like that.
Cross-promotion, like that, without him even knowing.
And then they'd all be gone 2 days later.
But maybe he'd lose some, because they wouldn't know who was who at that point.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
Maybe he uses your avatar and really confuses them.
I could even go with the real Craig Morgan.
Ooh. Isn't this the plot line for Face Off? I don't know. I haven't seen it that
like
either.
Like lightning strikes on or something?
Something like that. Chicago wins game three, they win the series. Or they at least could. I think they win the series, but...
If Chicago wins game three, they are the favorites again.
Yes.
I'd call it even money at that point.
It's not a knock on Nashville as much as...
It's the Blackhawks.
Chicago's a better hockey team.
They are a better hockey team than Nashville.
I think that's the difference, too. Like, Chicago's just a better team.
They're not rattled.
They may be rattled. What if they lose again tonight?
If they lose tonight, they may be rattled. But
They should be. Yeah.
Yeah. If they lose tonight and they're not rattled, then they need to start to check their pulse and see what's going on up in Chicago. But the more I watch playoffs, the more I realize there are certain teams that, as the series goes on, they get stronger. And no matter what happens, whether they lose, they don't get rattled and start to panic. And the other thing that people forget about, when you go up 2-0 in a series, you don't take your foot off the gas.
Right.
And there's only a couple teams that I'm sure there are more than two or three teams that are capable of doing that, but there's only really two that I know won't let up, and that's Pittsburgh and Chicago right now that's left in these playoffs.
They have rings.
Do the Predators do they keep the same strategy that they've kept? You've seen what they've done through the neutral zone, right? I mean, often when the Blackhawks are coming through the neutral zone, Nashville has five players between the red line and their own blue line. It's completely bottled up, which makes sense. You don't want Chicago to develop speed through the neutral zone or they'll kill you.
Columbus should be doing this.
And they're not a dump-and-run team. They don't like to give up the puck. So you're getting turnovers or they just can't get clean zone entries. You got to keep doing that.
You keep doing it until it doesn't work.
But and how do the Blackhawks combat that? I wish I had seen a story really breaking that down, because obviously this isn't the first time somebody's tried this against the Blackhawks. You want to slow them down through the neutral zone, but it's been really effective. Maybe that's just a matter of Nashville being so disciplined.
And it's discipline. It's the talent of that blue line too. Of being able to correct for mistake. I mean, that's the thing. You can try to run that system, but running that system with highly talented players gives you a whole different result.
Yeah. Look the way they're defending the net too. Yeah. By the way, Pecorino's been great, but he's not facing many rebounds.
No.
A lot of goalies will have success if it's just focus on the initial shot. You're good.
Yeah. Every NHL goalie should be fine if he doesn't have to stop rebounds. I mean, how many goals in the playoffs do you see as rebounds? Would you feel more comfortable if Nashville had won game 2-3-2 in overtime and Chicago had put their best out there and still lost?
I didn't care. Once it got away from them, I didn't care.
We haven't seen their best yet.
No, not even close.
And that would concern me as cool. Nashville. Yeah, but
they don't look anything like the team that I watched late in the season. Nothing like it.
And it feels like it would take two goals for them to potentially flip that switch again.
They hit two posts early in game two, if you remember. And, you know, Nashville got five goals. Well, if the Blackhawks get a lead, it changes the entire complexion of that game.
And that's important, too, because I think sometimes people go, oh, well, they hit two posts, but they lost by this many. The game is completely different. If that's 2-0 Chicago, the whole rest of this game is played completely different.
Yep, absolutely. So, but I do think it's important for them to score first.
Yes.
Because you get in a hole against them again, you're like, oh, God, here we go again.
You don't want those thoughts of
you're the trap.
25 minutes into the game, and oh, man, we still don't have a goal.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely important for them to score.
Score, period.
They have a real tough time winning if they don't.
Safe assumption.
I don't care how much experience they have.
What about the Corey Crawford thing, by the way? You guys agree with this, or would you put Scott Darling in?
This is interesting, because I actually had somebody write about this for today. I think I'm fine with keeping Crawford there. I know Darling settled things down in a similar situation. Was it a year ago or 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
2 years ago when they won the Cup.
Against the same team. Not the same player.
Because I was going to ask you, do you think, like, how quick is the hook on Crawford?
They lost
tonight?
The first game 1-0, by the way. It's not like Crawford is
completely melted.
Well,
you're doing it to send a message, I think, more than you're doing it to say Crawford's been bad.
This is my concern, though, with switching goalies in a playoff series, and I was definitely thinking this in the first 7 minutes of that Penguins game. My thought is when you switch goalies, you almost have to not just assume you're losing that game where you're switching goalies, but be prepared you may lose the game where you're switching goalies, because your new goalie has to get into the rhythm of the series.
I think if I'd wanted to go to Darling, I probably would have done it in game 2 when they fell behind 3-0.
Yeah.
That would have been the time to send him.
Get his feet wet and then had him play game 3.
Because if you bring him into game 3 and everybody else is flying around the ice and he's a little off and he gives up two goals and that's it, then where are you going back to Crawford in game 4?
You still have to play your best players.
That's the thing, too. I mean, again, you have rings, plural. You have a lot more. You have a lot more.
And I'm blaming Corey Crawford for this. I mean,
I'm not.
There was a bad short side goal that he gave up late in that game, but at that point, they're not coming back in that game. But in, like you said, game 1. He gave up one goal, and it was a fantastic goal, by the way.
When the other team's goalie has more points than your team does, that's not your goalie's fault.
No.
That's the easiest way I can put that.
The Blackhawks need to score early.
Toronto, Washington. Depending who you talk to, Toronto's already won the series.
Toronto's already won the series, and the Phil Kessel trade, they've won.
It was worth it, yeah.
So, amazing how things change so quickly.
If I'm a Capitals fan, I don't feel great right now, though, because both games went to overtime.
When do Capitals fans ever feel great?
They don't ever.
Yeah, you're
this
not
time
comfortable.
Of year especially.
Yeah, you can't be comfortable.
So it's a matter of what all the Caps have to do is win one of two games in Toronto.
You're going to win the series, but you don't look convincing yet, correct?
It's going to take them more games than they want to. They're not going to be as rested when they face the Penguins as they could have been.
Yeah. But that's okay. Listen, a lot of times, if you look through history too, a lot of times your biggest test comes in the first round. It's a jittery round for a lot of big time teams.
Just look at Minnesota this year. Their biggest test is coming in the first round.
Well, but we talk about Washington, Toronto, and still this is how you factor this in. But all the pressure on this series is on Washington.
Mm-hmm. Well, the longer it goes, I would be more concerned, obviously,
because Toronto could have got swept. They could have got destroyed in all of their games, and it's still a highly successful season, and Mike Babcock's the coach of the year. Coach of the decade. Coach of the always.
In every
statue
sport.
In front of their
Scotty Bowman reincarnate.
He's like a better Scotty Bowman and Vince Lombardi rolled into one. Because he got the Maple Leafs a playoff win. Not a series, one game.
A win.
I've heard the comparisons again between Ovechkin and Crosby, and Crosby's raising his team and Ovechkin isn't. Ovechkin is a wing. There's only so much he can do.
Players. They're different roles.
There's only so much you can do. This wide receiver
has not taken over the Super Bowl.
Exactly, that's exactly what it is. And it's a wing who doesn't handle the puck, right? He's not a guy who holds the puck and creates plays. He's a scorer, so he needs someone to get him the puck.
Now,
that's his role.
It would be nice to see him just take over a game and score a couple goals. He can do that, but it's not like he can just completely impose his will on a series, the position that he plays.
But this is why we always talk about, when we talk about the MVP race, and we talk about other things, of the value of a center over a wing, just the aspects of the game that you need to compete in as a center are completely different.
It
doesn't make Ovechkin any less of an elite player.
No.
It just is a different role.
But the narrative has followed him around his entire career that he can't win the big games, whether it's the NHL playoffs or the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And this is their best team, correct? This is the best team we've ever seen of Washington.
They've all said it. I mean, they've all said they're all in.
There's no reason they should not win the Cup.
And I still think
in terms of on-paper talent they have right now, there's no reason they shouldn't. Doesn't mean it's easy.
I don't know what to say about Washington anymore. I mean, they could win the series in five games.
Like we're in wait and see.
I'm not worried about them yet. I don't have any.
No,
I don't.
So what? You lost the game at home. So what?
Yeah, I don't have. I'm not worried.
Speaking of really nice overtime passes, though, to set up a goal, the Brian Boyle pass where he
Nico Montoya.
Yes, him. It's such a good play because there's no way Holtby can be watching his eyes because he's behind him, so he has to go to his left and to throw that pass across the grain and instantly, as Jamie just said, validated trading away Phil Kessel with that one pass by Brian Boyle. I mean, that's a big
pass. That narrative is hilarious to me.
All right. St. Louis, Minnesota.
The Coyotes should sign him, Brian Boyle. He'd be the answer.
Interesting.
Sorry.
Know where that came from.
Just ending some of the threads I get. No.
Brian Boyle's come a long way since getting stick lifted and scored on by Crosby all in one motion.
That was this year, wasn't it? Yeah. That was the goal of the year for Crosby. They keep showing that Buffalo goal.
It was so good.
That was a ridiculous goal. And never took his eyes off the pass,
The amount of talent that it takes to execute that play, to even try to execute that play.
Yes.
Is
all
in stunning.
A fraction of a second.
Stunning. Best player in the world.
In the last 2 years are the best we've seen him play. It's the best I've seen him play.
With all due respect to 4 years ago in Philadelphia and Claude Giroux, Sidney Crosby's the best player in the world, and it's not close.
Sorry, 2012, Claude. St. Louis, Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota.
This is where I was right.
Wasted season.
Night.
Chicago was my wait and see because I was so vocal about them. I was wrong about Columbus, it would appear. But Minnesota is a non-factor in these playoffs, and they've absolutely been a non-factor. They've lost every game. They've scored one goal in each game.
Yep. Zach Parise is the offense.
They're done.
That's all they've got. They are done. They're going four. They're absolutely getting swept.
No, they might get one.
They're getting swept.
No. I have no faith in Minnesota right now.
What if they treat game four like a game seven? Do you think that would help Minnesota?
I have more faith that if
they lose in overtime?
If the Blackhawks go down 3-0, I will still have more faith in the Blackhawks getting to a Game 7 than I will
have
the Blackhawks winning than having the Wild get to a Game 7.
Minnesota's
already been outcoached, by the way. Are we seeing this play out? Remember that narrative we talked about even a couple years ago when Bruce was in Anaheim and there were talks after the Blackhawks came back from a 3-2 deficit against Anaheim. There were players in that locker room saying he got outcoached on the bench. Are we seeing that, or is... I mean, there's a lot more play here, right?
It's tough for me to evaluate that stuff, again, knowing what he does in the locker room behind closed doors and that stuff. But I just continue to have the feeling that he is just hockey's Marty Schottenheimer.
You can't score. Okay, so the last four times you've played St. Louis, you've scored one goal.
Yeah.
Four straight games, you've scored one goal.
But Jake Allen is playing out of his mind.
He is, but is part of that because he's playing the Minnesota Wild.
Well, I mean, look.
We've seen this from them before in the playoffs, by the way, too.
We've seen it from Minnesota in the last two months. I mean, it's not like they came into the playoffs playing well and they've run into a hot goalie. They were horrible for the last month and a half.
And their old goaltender is not giving them any confidence either because he's giving up bad goals every game.
But that's part of the equation. Part of the equation is how you played down the stretch. Because it's not like you were playing for nothing.
No. If you're heading into the playoffs, you need to be winning some games. I mean, again, we keep pointing to the same top teams, but St. Louis is one of them as well. The Blues knew they were in the playoffs a month ago, and they played their best hockey in that final month of the season when all that was really on the line
was not play in Chicago, really.
Yeah, which, really.
You know, turned out so bad.
And now they might not have to play them at all.
But, I mean, they knew they weren't going to get suddenly home ice, St. Louis, and they kept fine-tuning their game. Chicago was playing better down the stretch. Pittsburgh was playing better down the stretch. Columbus and Minnesota were not. and it's carrying over into the playoffs right now. Minnesota especially. But I don't know that you can pin this on Boudreau, because every one of these games has basically been a 2-1 game. There's an empty netter in game three, and they've outshot St. Louis every game, which doesn't always mean everything unless you outshoot a team 52-26.
No, and where are the shots coming from? What sort of shots are you getting? That's a big part of this.
And they've been losing early in some of these games, too, which is going to tell the ice a bit.
And St. Louis has definitely been sitting on those leads. So, I don't know. I think some of this has to fall on Boudreau. What adjustments is he making? What are they doing to try and combat this? It's a team that scored a lot.
At some point, they have to take that next step in their progression, and they haven't.
No. Do they have the players to do it? Do you think they have the players to do it?
I think they have the players to be what the New York Rangers have been. Do I think they have the players to win a cup or win multiple cups? Probably not.
Yeah.
But to me, I don't see a reason they can't do what the Rangers did the last 5 or 6 years, where you pop up in a fairly weak year as maybe as an Eastern Conference champion, but you're always in that first, second-round conversation. They are very similar in the sense of they don't have a superstar player. They have a lot of solid players down the middle, but no true elite number one center. I still think they have good goaltending in the totality of it, but maybe not. Not like Lundqvist, because Lundqvist has shown in 4 or 5 years ago, that stretch, he was elite or very above average the entire time.
Yeah.
Dubnyk was awful the last 2 months.
And Dubnyk's been really very bad lately.
Yeah, 2 months.
I think Dubnyk is a fine goalie unless you're going into the playoffs the way Minnesota did. Basically, the way Montreal, we all thought the Canadiens were going in, where our goalie will bail us out. Devan Dubnyk is a very good goalie, but I don't think he's going to win you a series by himself because he hasn't shown it yet. And this would be the series to win by yourself because your team's not scoring at all.
They need a goal scorer. They need somebody that can impact the game on the wing. I mean, they just don't have it.
Well, are you upset just because they have two guys that have goals in the entire series? Is that why?
No, because that's a flaw that they've had the entire time. I mean, who's going to take over a game for you?
Right.
Who's going to score earlier
that it would have been a guy like Zach Parise, who has two goals in these playoffs.
He does, but he's not Parise. He's not the Parise of 5 or 6 years
ago.
No,
he's not.
You know, he's not that player anymore.
He struggled
for huge portions of the season.
You'd have to... Eric Staal in this series? Somewhat disappointing again, right?
But what's your plan? I mean, if you're a team, this is a tough spot to fall into where you're a playoff team every year, but you don't have a superstar. You're not drafting one. You're hoping Eriksson Ek comes over, I guess, is that guy.
They have like 5 great prospects, so maybe you just say, okay, let's see. Let's see what these guys bring, and maybe they will be the answers. But right now, it's pretty obvious. They'll be out one more game. By the way, while we're on this topic of the Minnesota Wild, a few ex-Coyotes, we've mentioned one, Devan Dubnyk, but also Martin Hanzel and Ryan White playing for this team. Not seeing any one of these guys add much. In fact, I tallied this up. There are 16 ex-Coyotes. I may be wrong on this number. I may have overlooked someone. I'm not counting Oscar Lindbergh because he never played a game for the Coyotes.
Is Enver Leeson still in the league?
Shout out to Oscar Lindbergh.
Oscar Lindbergh. Never played a game for the Coyotes. Don't come at me with Oscar Lindbergh.
Remember when he had one good month for the Rangers last year and everybody freaked out?
Yeah,
he's been invisible since?
I think Craig just said, don't at me. That's something I just heard.
But at the country music singer, Craig Morgan, with all your Oscar Lindbergh
you
takes.
You real Craig Morgan.
That poor guy's
Yes, gonna... I am that guy. That's what I should put on my Twitter handle. Yes, that's me.
That's your entire bio.
If that guy writes a song about Oscar Lindbergh on his next album, we're going to know we have some power.
Musical notes all over.
We'll just think you're a Blues fan.
16 ex-Coyotes in the playoffs. 3 of them goalies. 1 of them is Al Montoya, who's not even playing. And I quizzed you guys on this earlier. I probably should have done this on the show. But total points for those 16 players, 13 skaters. Granted, guys like Mikhail Botker were healthy scratch in the last game.
Deservedly
so. 1 point between them. Yeah. 1 point.
Look, Jamie is generally... skeptical, is that a fair way to put it? And Jamie said 10 points, and it was 1 point.
You said 2. You were close.
And I was over.
You were over still, yes. Not only that, there have been a lot of poor plays by ex-Coyotes. David Schlemko's come to mind last year when he decided to throw the puck up the middle of the ice late in the third period in a scoreless game. Well, that got picked up
to be
by
fair,
Zach
it was
Cassian.
The only goal
that's,
of the
that's
game.
A good, that's a good choice. Yeah, you don't want to go indirect on that play, just... throw it right up
so
in the middle.
See what happens. More points.
That's,
and that was in the back of the net. And that was the difference. In a game, by the way, that San Jose should have won.
And that's
they were the
a play that just
night.
Makes your coach rip his hair out. Because that's... You never have to pass it up the middle
Why?
Of the ice. You never have to.
Exactly.
Turn
Why
it over behind
a guy
the net.
Been around that long not know that simple
It's not
thing.
Just him, though. If you watch these games, these are the best players in the world on the best teams in the best league in the world, and you will see maybe not that extreme of a play, but you will see guys try and make ill-advised passes up in front of their own goalie that sometimes, you know, a defenseman makes a nice play and you never think of it again. You should never make the pass.
I understand when you're, let's say, for the Coyotes fans listening, I understand if you're a Max Domi trying to do something that you probably should do.
Or Anthony D'Angelo. He pretty much does it every time he has the puck in his own end.
But there's a difference between if you're a high-skilled player.
Dude has a long way to go. I know people love him in the Coyotes fan base, but he's a train wreck in his own end.
But shouldn't that be easy to fix? Don't pass up the middle.
It should, but the mentality of it.
It's actually not that simple because Jimmy Playfair will tell you there are times when they want the center as an outlet, or they want the guy coming through the middle as an outlet in the pass. But you have to recognize the situation in the game. That's a big part of it. It's a scoreless game late in the third period. That's not the time to try that pass.
And you have to know where Zach Cassian is at all times at this point because he's a scoring machine.
Like, if you couldn't see him, if you were screened out, that's not a pass you make at that situation.
Situational
awareness.
You have
to know that, yes.
Situational awareness. When's the time to do that? And all sports, especially hockey, when's the time to take that risk, when's not? But I can also understand if I'm a superstar player I think I can do something fancy and get it across. Now, there's also times where you're a third-pairing defenseman that's barely being played.
David Schlenko.
You can't be trying plays that you're not 100% certain that you can have success with. You just can't get fancy.
And you're right about because you're going to lose your job.
Yeah.
Like, that superstar has a little bit of license to make that mistake because
and also a history
he's going
of
to come out on the positive because he's going to make some of those plays. He's going to make some ridiculous plays for you.
And you
David Schlemko is not going to make those plays for you anyway, so don't try a low percentage play late in the game.
And again, you hate
tie.
Those plays no matter what. But you also hate when your sixth defenseman that plays 14 minutes a night costs you a hockey game.
Right.
Even more.
You don't have to force the issue there either. It's not like you were down 3-0 or 2-0 and you had to get a goal. It's tied.
You've been a better team. Just keep going.
That's not his fault they lost. I mean, they're not scoring goals. We may as well get into that series.
Yeah, let's figure that was my subtle segue.
Well, it would be great if I just jumped to Rangers Montreal right now. Jamie and I both picked Edmonton, I believe. Did you pick Edmonton?
Yeah.
I know that.
I swapped once I heard Thornton was out.
Okay. And Craig went with San Jose. I mean, the series is probably going to go 7 games, so who knows who wins. But is this it doesn't shock me that Edmonton's up 2-1. It's how they've gotten there that's very strange.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like San Jose came in, and we talked about this. If you're going to play Edmonton in a best-of-7 series, take McDavid out, basically, or minimize him and make somebody else beat you. I would have assumed that was Leon Draisaitl, and apparently it's Zach Cassian, who, before we get into this, that hit on Logan Couture in Game 2 that everybody's calling like the hit of the decade or whatever, and it was very entertaining, and fortunately Couture wasn't hurt. Did he not leave his feet?
He sure did.
He looked like he was shot out of a rocket.
Yeah, I thought that was a dirty hit.
Are you expecting
consistency from the NHL?
Well, I'm expecting consistency from everybody.
One game for assaulting someone at center ice as the game was ending.
Yeah, that
literally was assault.
And there was no history between Matt Calvert and Tom Kunoch.
Oh, sticks break so easily.
He came back and threw it at forearm
in his
face.
In the neck. Okay. So, wow, he missed. Okay.
Does he not get suspended?
What was intent there? Is it even a gray area what the intent was there? Oh, I didn't get him to the ice with the blow of the stick over his arm or elbow or whatever that shattered. So I'm going to go back at him while he's in a vulnerable position and make sure I put him down.
It looked like it was an intentional foul where he was trying to get a suspension. That's what that play looked like between Calvert and Tom Kunoch at the end of game.
All I need to do is wear the shirt that said it. Suspend me. And he gets one game. It's the playoffs. Okay, I get that. But still, one game?
Well, but
one game for that. That's, to me, it's absurd. This is just a consistent problem with this league.
Well, they did at least suspend him, though.
I don't think they were going to initially until they realized what an outcry there was.
The Cassian one is weird because how many times do we see a big hit and then you see people do the frame by frame and they're like, it looks like his skate isn't completely touching the ice. He's an inch off the ice. Zach Cassian's feet are 3 feet off the ice.
Rafi Torres, remember that one? Yeah. He didn't leave the ice. There's nothing wrong with that hit on Marian Hossa.
But what's I'm glad you bring that up. What's the difference between Cassian's hit and Rafi Torres' hit?
Definitely the air.
Yeah. Cassian got more air, and he didn't hit him as squarely, and he didn't injure him. But it's the same.
That's the difference. Unfortunately, that's the difference.
And nobody's even talking about
it. If Hossa jumps right back up there, which he had no business doing because he was, that was as dirty hit as you can imagine. Rafi Torres not even get a quarter of that suspension.
But he's still getting suspended because Torres.
But that shouldn't matter.
Something's not right there.
Anyway. If you're intending to hurt somebody, you interviewed him.
nice guy,
but.
But if you're intending to hurt somebody, you're never intending felt
quite
to hurt
comfortable
somebody.
In one-on-ones.
Well, it's, I mean, Zach Cassian.
Back up over here while I talk to you. Zach Cassian
has a history too. I know that he's cleaned his image up and everything, and that's great, and I'm happy for the guy. And it is cool. And Craig, you sent this in the pre-show notes of how great it is in the playoffs for guys you don't expect to be heroes, like yes. Zach Cassian and Jake Gensler, who we're talking about
Joel
today.
Edmonton.
Yeah, but that hit, I can't believe nobody's even bringing it up.
I agree. Especially with his history, too.
Yeah.
I
mean,
they're celebrating it. It's in all the highlight packages coming back from commercials.
Yeah.
Are we worried about the Sharks? Because McDavid hasn't even really done anything yet. He's going to do something.
Possibly, because they can't score.
Yeah.
They can't score. And unlike the Blackhawks, this has been a trend with San Jose. You watched that game last night, and I just kept thinking, San Jose's got to score, right? They're going to win this game because they've been the better team. But they can't find the back of the net. It's just crazy.
Is it worse to lose a game where you get blown out, or is it worse to be the better team and lose because you know you had that effort you're trying to get and you still have nothing to show for it?
I think it's the latter.
Yeah.
When you know you're the better team and you've lost, that's a frustrating feeling.
Is Cam Talbot this year's Martin Jones, where he just comes in and takes over for a team?
He's been pretty good. You think he's been pretty good, but I don't think he's been great. I don't think he's had
any great. Tested
He's not as good as his stat line shows.
Yeah, just like Pecorino, to be honest.
I also wonder, you know, again, obviously, Thornton did play last night, but I start to look at that team and wonder, what does Sharks Couture's their number one center? What does that team look like? Because I'm not sure. I mean, I just at some point do we have to just come to terms with Couture's what he is, and that's all he's going to be?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah,
he's a number two center.
Yeah, he's a number two center with some limitations.
A great fit as a number two center, but yeah, he's not going to be Joe Thornton.
No.
The two things about San Jose...
And wow, that mouth, by the way. Oof.
Yeah.
That's nasty.
The two things about San Jose, you don't expect Marc-Edouard Vlasic to be your leading scorer in a playoff series, and Joe Pavelski is, to me, the face of the Sharks in the playoffs. Last year, they made that run. It was Joe Pavelski, and Craig brought this up off the air. I didn't know Joe Pavelski was playing last night.
He's been invisible, except when he's committing turnovers, bad turnovers.
Yeah,
he doesn't look like himself at all.
Are we
I don't
sure?
know if he's hurt. You never know. You never know.
You never,
dead,
yeah, that's
right?
the thing. You never know.
Joe Pavelski does not look anything like the guy we saw last year in the postseason.
Not just last year in the postseason. His entire career.
Yeah.
He's always.
He's an elite talent that has been completely invisible.
I feel like we're going. He's the kind of guy when their season ends, we're going to find out he's having off-season surgery.
Yeah.
But what do we attribute this to? Because Edmonton's not great defensively. And I thought of both of you this morning when I was driving over here and heard how,
that's
again,
so kind.
This validates the Adam Larson trade. That's
it doesn't, but if people want to put that narrative there, then they can.
But they are. They're putting it.
That is the thing that's perplexing to me, because Edmonton is not that good defensively, and yet San Jose is just not generating enough.
It's that. It's when Pavelski is not generating offense. That, but that top line, Pavelski, Thornton, and whoever they decide to put at left wing from time to time, that changes. If they're not getting a lot of chewing up minutes in the offensive zone, that team does not produce. They just don't. And they have a lot of players. They have a lot of. I'm careful how I say this because every player is streaky. Every goal scorer is streaky. That's unless you're scoring 82 goals a year, there's games where you're not going to score.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of players that can pop up for short periods of time, like a Tomas Hertl. But there's also long stretches in the season where those guys go completely invisible. And we talk about players who don't play well a 200-foot game well. That when they're not scoring, they're not having an impact. One of them was sitting on the bench last night.
Yeah. Mikhail Bodker.
Mm-hmm. Press
What's
box,
interesting,
not
there was some discussion about why he wasn't in the lineup. Aside from, I mean, it's pretty simple for me. He's not producing.
No,
it's,
and hasn't all season.
It's that simple. But, you know, people are talking about them wanting to play a grittier game. First of all, why? Why do you want to play a grittier game? And secondly, to say that Mikhail Bodker can't play a gritty game is incorrect. He's actually really good along the walls, if you've ever watched his stick work. He's very good in that situation. He's just not producing.
He's the definition of a streaky goal scorer, and that's fine if he is on your third line or he's on your second line, but he's your fifth or sixth scoring option. But when you're in a situation like San Jose's in, and they're not looking at Mikhail Bodker and saying, you get us out of this, what do? They went to the Stanley Cup last year. But if nobody else is scoring, he's probably not going to save you.
But if you're taking him out of the lineup and having some greasy fourth liner instead.
Yeah.
When your problem right now is you can't score goals.
Yeah.
I don't think I agree with that. Granted, he'll probably not produce, but
back in there in game four. I mean, where's Brent Burns though? Too, like, this team can.
Where's he been the last like 2 months? I agree.
Rangers, Canadians.
Weird series.
Speaking of a series with no offense, but we expected no offense in this series. I was listening to a show earlier this morning, and it was based in Canada. I guess I could have just had you guys guess this.
Was it in French?
No, it was not. Okay. They were
multilingual.
I took French for a year in high school. They were criticizing Evgeny Kuznetsov for being too brash and too celebratory when he's never won anything.
Too Russian?
Well, except Alex Radulov is passionate and emotional.
But he's there Russian.
Yes.
Got it.
You can interpret it any way you want.
Got it. Got it.
How's that move worked out, by the way?
That goal yesterday was impressive.
One-handed. Fending off the defender with the other. And good Lord, that was an incredible goal.
When they made that signing in the offseason, as Jamie bashed them for signing a glorified third liner.
I said those words. I did.
But I feel like we all said, for a team that doesn't have offense, why not take the chance? Now, he may not do anything for you, but maybe he's a guy that can score you some big goals because he's been so great in the KHL his whole career. And he's come up huge in this series. And, you know, this is the sort of series you would hope he would come up huge because the Rangers don't score.
And he looks engaged at all times.
Yeah.
He looks like he's making it. And he has all season, to his credit. Like, looks like he
dipped off for a while.
Yes, but he dipped off in production. It didn't. I didn't get the sense that, he doesn't care.
That, yeah,
which
that's
we
fair.
Got a lot of for that brief return back to Nashville. There was a lot of, we'll see what we get. I haven't had a chance to talk with him, obviously, so I don't know whether he's grown up or whether he's just realized that, hey, I have all this talent. If I actually put forth the full effort I can put forth, I can be an elite player.
We all know I like to play at night.
Wow. Well, there will be no stopovers in Scottsdale in this series, so I don't think he's letting, although Manhattan's probably a pretty good place to play.
I'm sure he's got a couple things to do in Montreal and Manhattan.
Do they have a nightlife in Montreal?
Has less rules than Phoenix, let's put it that way.
No, he's
Phoenix is asleep at 9 p.m. Montreal and Manhattan are not.
Well, take that. He's finally turned on his own city. It's bound to happen at some point. Why can't the Rangers score?
Because they don't have the puck?
Yeah, they never have the puck anymore. Tinnerglass isn't getting enough minutes, that's why.
Yesterday's game, watching the Rangers yesterday, was painful.
It was sad.
That's the most boring series.
I have felt like the Rangers have been getting progressively worse as this series has gone along. And they've been a bad possession team anyway. They just managed the puck poorly. And yesterday was a train wreck. How many shots did they finish with? What was the final tally?
Four. I don't know.
Go back and look.
So, they were brutal.
Did you know Rick Nash has 23 goals this year? Or I guess I should back up. Did you remember Rick Nash was in the league? And then did you know he has 23 goals?
You know my feelings on Rick Nash.
I remember Rick Nash, yes.
He used to be. Okay.
But he's not. He is one of the most. When he went to New York, went to New York as one of the most overrated players in hockey and has proven that accurate so far.
He's been non-existent in New York. He was fantastic in Columbus. And that, to me, is a guy I look at and I'm like, hey, you put up 40 goals in the season. We just need one, probably, to win one of these games. Go out there and get it, Rick.
Why is New York such a bad possession team?
See, that I don't
discuss.
Know. That I don't
while
know.
While I put away my coffee.
Yeah.
Did your coffee taste differently today?
A little bit.
A
little bit. I don't know.
Don't look at me. I didn't make the coffees. I just sat in line for four hours to get the coffees. My coffee tastes delightful.
Oh, look at that. The date on this cup is old.
Oh, yeah. I asked for the oldest cups I could get.
November 25th.
Interesting.
I waited in line at the dumpster for your coffee.
I can't quite put my finger on what the specific issue is because they haven't had an elite talent the last few years and they've been a much better possession team. So we can't necessarily call it the Minnesota syndrome. But I just maybe at some point they have to get more established talent. I mean, you look at a lot of the young guys they have in the lineup, you know, the VCs of the world and the Hazes of the world and the Criers of the world.
But shouldn't the blue line be driving that? Shouldn't they be good enough on their blue line to be a decent possession team?
Their bottom two pairs are nothing to write home about.
Do you often write home about teams' bottom two pairs? And you're like, oh, Brady Shea.
No, but there's the difference between teams that are active, their bottom pairs are actively hurting them on a nightly basis versus they're just there.
Yeah.
And they don't have the elite defenseman anymore. I feel like they have very good defensemen at the top. I don't think they have an elite defenseman anymore. I don't think McDonough is an elite player like he maybe was touching 2 or 3 years ago.
I was duped into picking the Rangers.
By whom?
Myself.
Okay.
Nothing the Rangers do now is better than what they did 2 years ago.
No.
And I think that's their significant problem.
They're basically what I think everybody who was rational about the Canadiens viewed as an issue of Montreal is going to lean on Carey Price, and I don't know who's going to score. And my thought with the Rangers was, well, Henrik Lundqvist is going to show up in the playoffs. He always does. And if you get to a Game 7, he wins like 99% of the time.
The Rangers scored a ton, though, during the regular season.
Yeah.
A lot of goals.
And maybe some of this is Carey Price, but it just doesn't even feel like they're getting great opportunities.
No, they didn't get anything yesterday. And again, they don't. I can't figure out how New York scored as much as they did because they're a bad possession team.
Montreal looks like a much more skilled team. You feel a difference when the puck is on a Montreal player's stick versus when it's on a New York player's stick.
You ever go on the timelines of the beat writers that cover the teams and just see what the fans are saying? There was so much Rangers Stanley Cup window closing fast. Wow.
Like in the third
period?
They
actually really believe it's open.
But to say closing fast, tweets from 2015.
It closed a couple years ago.
Tweets
News
from 2015.
Flash.
Yeah, are you sure you weren't
it's
reading
over.
Old tweets?
This is just hanging on here now. This is not a cup team.
No, but they're
this
in a bad
not
spot.
A team that can win a cup.
It is kind of remarkable how many teams in these playoffs, though, are either they're at their ceiling and that ceiling is not good enough, or they're trending the wrong way. Usually in the playoffs, doesn't it feel like we have teams on the way up or teams that are fighting for a cup or, you know, teams that might be there next year? Like, we're talking about Minnesota. We're talking about the Rangers. We're talking about teams that not only aren't there, but there's no clear path to get there
mm-hmm.
at this point.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of upset there.
I don't know.
And
I mean, you can talk about teams that are on the way up in Toronto and Edmonton. But
yeah. No, I mean, there's definitely teams on the way up.
Yeah, maybe even Nashville, by the way.
Maybe even Nashville. Columbus. I still am very bullish on their future.
Yeah, what would have happened
in the series,
if they didn't
but
have
future.
To face Pittsburgh?
Well,
in the first
it's garbage. I still keep
Although,
that stance that they
could,
shouldn't have to play
that
Pittsburgh.
That could continue to be a problem for them for a long time, the way this structure is.
They'll have to play Pittsburgh or Washington in the
Washington
first round every year.
Won't be better next year, but they'll still be very, very good.
Columbus, if your consolation if you lose the series to Pittsburgh is you're playing
play
them or Washington.
We just did buy a seat.
I can find it because I tweeted it out.
Were they the third best record?
If you did it the way that the NHL used to do it, if you're going to keep, they would play the Rangers because Montreal would have been the two seed because they won their division.
Taken them in that
the Tortorella Bowl.
Yeah, the Tortorella Bowl. Well, that sounds
a lot of
like
that
a
going
party.
Around. Mike Yeo and
yeah.
Weird.
So that's who they should have been playing. I'll stand by that. And Pittsburgh should have played Ottawa, and you guys wouldn't even have watched the series, I bet.
Series would have been already over before.
Yeah, it would have been over.
They would have got a bye into the second round.
No love about Ottawa. Calgary-Anaheim.
Calgary-Anaheim. Is that our last series?
No, I'm saving the best for last.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you this. Calgary's going to have to win a game in Anaheim if they want to win the series.
29 in a row.
Just insane.
It's the most complicated,
record. Okay, let's start with the disallowed goal.
Yeah, I was talking about the record. 29 losses in a row in Anaheim. That's all I had to say. Go ahead.
29. That's insane. That's a big number.
That's counting playoffs, too.
It's hard to do. It's
that's
hard
tough.
To lose 29 straight in one building.
Even the Oilers, when the Coyotes and Tippett had that streak, had like a couple overtime shootout
wins
in there. Right.
Or whatever, yeah. And you weren't playing them in the playoffs.
The disallowed goal.
It
wasn't
confused.
Controversial. It was only controversial in Calgary. There were like two guys like laying in the crease. Interfering with the goaltender. Not one, but two. There's no way he could make a save there. That was absolutely goaltender interference.
Yes.
And the fact that they're even questioning that is just
They're not just questioning it, though. It seemed to get them off their game.
Apparently,
he
got an unnamed executive to slam a door up in the booth where the...
yeah.
I don't know who that was.
No.
No.
No idea.
But we do need to get him on the show this summer at some point. Maybe we won't ask him about
that.
Yeah. When we figure out who it was, we'll get him on the show.
Sounds good.
When he gets hired at his new destination, we'll...
Yeah, I don't... I mean...
I, which is ridiculous, but...
Is he with
by the
Calgary
way,
if they don't
if they
win?
Go out in this first round in five games, is he going to get a new contract?
They should have given it to
guy,
him before
not
this.
The guy that slammed the door.
Yeah.
We're talking about Brad now.
People love it on podcasts when you speak in vague terms that they can't follow along with, especially 3 hours into the episode. But Calgary wasn't happy after that disallowed goal. Two penalties in the last 5.5 minutes, too.
Yeah.
We know their announcers weren't specifically happy with
shocking.
Dougie Hamilton. That game didn't go well for anybody in Calgary.
Even if the Flames get swept, they are better than a team that should get swept. But they are still very, very much on the proper timeline. Yes, you want to win the series. Yes, you want to perform better. But long-term, big picture, you're fine. So doing anything crazy, like not extending an executive on your team to help build the team and make some trades and some draft picks that helped your team, I don't know, get to this point, would be a little weird.
That's the only crazy thing they might do, right? They're not going to mess with this roster. Dougie Hamilton didn't take out Ryan Getzlaf. Ryan Getzlaf's been the best player in the series. But he actually laid him out on a hit. Hamilton's not that big.
Made a mistake, too, and obviously, in that game. But he's 23 now.
You got to take the good with the bad.
He's going to make some mistakes. And he had an incredible season, and he's trending toward elite NHL defenseman. Really close to that status now.
Uh-huh. What do we think of Anaheim? To me, they don't play the same style of hockey that the Kings did a couple years ago, but they are that sort of team that everybody just kind of overlooks. I don't know if it's because they're in the Southwest, or they're playing games late at night, or they just win every game by a goal. But they win every game by a goal.
Go ahead.
No, I would say I like the core of their team. I like their ability of their top two lines to take over games over lesser talent. Like, there are sometimes teams that, their top lines play well, but they don't dominate a game when they should, whether it's they take it off, we're better than this team. They dominate guys. Kessler has become the ultimate pest to any center that's any skill center they put him up against. I like a lot of what that team does well. I don't know how long they can continue to do it as some of their older players age, but they just have a piece where this is – I know I'm not articulating this very well, but I think I will boil it down to this. This is what a New York Rangers team would have looked like if they had more top-end talent, where they have very few weaknesses from top to bottom in their lineup. They might not have a lot of elite players, but they have more than the Minnesotas.
Right, but they do have, guy who has been an elite center, Ryan Getzlaf, obviously. They have goal scorers. I like the Patrick Hughes pickup at the deadline. I thought that was a smart move for them. And let's not forget, this team has a very good blue line as well. They're going to lose some of these guys because they're so stacked there. I like them up the middle, too.
Yeah.
You got Antoine Vermette as your third line center. I'm pretty happy with that situation. I know he's slowed down a bit. And look, nobody's accusing Anaheim of being a fast team, but they do play to their strengths. Do I think they're a cup contender? I don't know. But with what's happening in the West, like, say the Blackhawks go down in the first round, could Anaheim get out of the West? Why not?
Chicago goes out in the first round.
It's wide open.
I mean, Edmonton could go to the Stanley
Cup. Anybody could, you're right.
I'd probably pick St. Louis, but Anaheim's 13-0-3 in their last 16, so that's another team that finished the season strong when they already knew they were in the playoffs. They were playing for the division title and all that, but they knew they were in, and they've been on fire. They're going to lose, as you just said, Craig, they're going to lose somebody to the expansion draft, whether it's one of those four or five defensemen, and then they have a couple more on the way up that they don't have to protect yet, or it's going to be Silverberg, it's not going to be Raquel, but they can only lose one.
Right.
So they are kind of set up, at least on the blue line. They don't have a lot of young scorers up front.
And I'm with you. I think it has to be a defenseman that you lose. Yeah. When you have such a depth at a position, that's the position where you want to lose someone.
And you do everything you can to make a trade to get something back.
You can't lose Silverberg or Raquel because you don't have any other young scorers.
You got to protect those guys, and then so you got to go the 7-3-1 route, and then you're going to lose a defenseman. So be it.
Yeah, this is gonna sound weird to say, I know it, but
nice.
I feel like Anaheim, this version of Anaheim, is a team that they're going to have to get beaten by a better team. I don't look at this team as, oh, they're primed for an upset, or maybe a young, fast team like Edmonton can beat them. I think they're going to have to play an actual team that has more on paper talent than them to knock them out this year.
Yeah,
which is a Chicago or a list of about maybe two or three teams in the East.
I'm kind of with you because I do think we'll see Anaheim Edmonton in the second round, and I think Anaheim will figure out a way to beat Edmonton because they always seem to find a way to score two or three goals or whatever it takes.
And they don't have to worry about a game seven now either.
True.
They don't have to handle game three like it is a game seven. All right, I saved the best for last. I told you guys. Boston, Ottawa. Let's get into this.
So we're done here.
Wow.
Okay.
Just a lack of respect for Ottawa on the show.
Erik Karlsson, wow, what a special player.
He's been good.
That's it for me.
Yeah, Karlsson's very good. I don't have many takes on the series.
You want to just thoughts off the top of my head, like stream of consciousness?
Yeah, go ahead.
Patrice Bergeron, Selke.
Kind of like to see Boston Brad Marchand in the second round.
Good two-way player.
We might have two award winners in the series.
Yep, and no cup winners.
Wow, what's been the best series so far in your mind? What's the one that you're turning on every time?
It's for Columbus. Okay. I want to watch.
Yeah, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Washington, Toronto, close second.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because there are a lot of on ice reasons to watch, and there also are off ice storylines to watch.
Has there been a good Western Conference series?
I keep thinking that Edmonton and San Jose is going to turn into it, but the games really haven't been that boring. Aesthetically pleasing.
They've been boring. There isn't a good Western Conference series in my mind. There hasn't been any good hockey played in the Western Conference by both teams.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a game where you're like, wow, both these teams are on. This is going to be great to watch.
Calgary-Anaheim has the same feel as Calgary-Winnipeg a couple years ago, where those games have been very close, but Anaheim-Winnipeg.
Yeah, but
Anaheim still swept.
And by the way, Winnipeg played Anaheim a lot tougher than Calgary's played Anaheim.
Yeah, but both the games have been one-goal games. They've both been up in the air in the final minute.
But it's inevitable. Like, I watched Ducks Flames, and at no point I'm like, oh, yeah, the Flames got this.
Agreed.
And maybe a lot of that's perception, but it's also that's what makes a series if you're thinking, wow, this team could really do something.
Yeah.
Both teams feel dangerous.
That's fair.
I watch Calgary play. I'm like, oh, okay. I like some of the pieces they have, but I have no fear that they're going to knock off Anaheim. And it would have been Chicago-Nashville if I knew Nashville was playing this well, but Chicago hasn't held up their end of the bargain.
But that's the series, right? Chicago's going to push back, and that's going to be the best series.
I'm not certain of that yet, but if they do, yeah, if they do, become the best series. But you know, I thought St. Louis-Minnesota was going to be the best series in this round, and like the first game I thought was a pretty good game. But
we all picked St. Louis instantly.
Like Minnesota's so fragile. I have no belief that they're coming back. Yeah. At the start of this postseason, in my preview, I said none of the Western Conference matchups are all that intriguing. It's played out that way.
Minnesota looks like they were so distraught by the end of the season that being in the playoffs is an inconvenience for them. That's what Minnesota looks like. Whereas St. Louis, I think, is quietly a very dangerous team. If I were a Blackhawks fan, which I'm not, I'm actually more worried about what I've seen so far with a potential matchup with St. Louis in the second round. Chicago makes a push back, even if they don't win this series. There's no way a team like that just rolls over and goes out four.
The question is, when do they make the push? Because if they don't make the push in Game 3, I don't care when they make the push.
Yeah. They'll make it tonight.
Right. If they make it in Game 4, winning four straight games. You just can't count on that. Remember, they did this in 2011 against Vancouver the year after they won the Cup, and they lost 44% of their roster. They lost the first three games, won the next three, and forced overtime in Game 7, but if you watch that Game 7, you're like, they're just hanging on.
Yeah.
I just don't see it. Yeah.
But they didn't win the Cup last year. That's why they're supposed to be stronger this year. They're not beat up.
They did go 2 years between winning Cups, 2010 and 2013. They were off for 2 years, but then they lost 44% of their roster. Yeah. So.
I shouldn't say I'll start to worry about them, but I will think they're in legitimate trouble if they lose a game in overtime. Even if they win the next two, but then they lose Game 5 in overtime or whatever.
Lose Game 5, and it's 2-2.
Yeah. Game 5.
And you're down 3-2 then, you're talking about?
Well, they never lose in overtime. Even if they go up 3-2, but they lose Game 6 in overtime. Well, in the playoffs, they always seem to win, or they lose Game 7 in overtime. They're a team that when you get to overtime, they tend to win. And I don't know. I haven't seen that from Nashville yet. Nashville's such an unknown in the Western Conference.
I don't know who this Blackhawk team is that I'm watching. It's just been bizarre. The first two games, it's almost looked like they're disinterested.
Well, I talked to you after Game 1, and you said, I mean, this is what they do. They've lost six of their last...
Six of the last eight playoff openers they've lost. So when I saw them lose Game 1, 1-0, and really come hard at Nashville at the end of that game, I was like, yeah, whatever. This is what they do all the time. But then... Game 2 was just mind-blowing.
It's the point where you just run out of time. You run out of time to come back in a series.
Yeah.
It's now. If they don't win this game, they're not coming back.
No, I agree.
Who has been we talked about Zach Cassian and Jake Guentzel, but who are some of the other guys that have just, like you said, the best part of the playoffs in the NHL? And I'm not trying to rip the NBA, but you don't often see it in the NBA because you kind of know what's happening.
Aren't going to upset the Celtics in the first round because they won one game?
Who are the players that have jumped out at you that have been like the best stories because you didn't expect them to do anything necessarily?
Well, we mentioned some of them already.
Those two.
Jake Guentzel, I sort of expected to do something because of who he plays with. But yeah, you talked about Edmondson is one of those guys. Yeah. Zach Cassian's another.
I've been very impressed with Jake Allen.
Dion Phaneuf.
Yes.
That's an interesting
one. By the way,
one.
Pierre McGuire, this is a note in my roundup last night saying that if we were to vote on the Norris Trophy for the playoffs after two games, take into account all those qualifiers.
Okay.
Petrangelo would win the Norris Trophy if we were voting on a regular season award in the postseason
after two games.
Two games.
And Actually, Alex Pietrangelo probably wouldn't even win the Norris Trophy, but I know you're covering that series, Pierre, so that's what's in front of you.
Boy.
But I had a little fun with it, and I decided to see who would win the various trophies.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. So our trophy winner, Evgeny Malkin, leading the playoffs in points now, isn't he?
Yeah, yes, he is.
So there you go. Somehow Norris Trophy, Dion Phaneuf.
Yeah, he has 3 points already. Come on. 30 all season.
Vezina Trophy, Pecorino hasn't allowed a goal yet.
Yeah, he'd probably get it. Although Jake Allen's right there.
But zero goals, man.
That's true.
He's got a 1,000 save
percentage. How many assists does Jake Allen have?
That's a great point.
True. Look at that. So he's contributing offensively.
Yeah.
Goalie pads are very vibrant.
He would lead all ex-Coyotes.
The Blackhawks. He's got more points than the Blackhawks. And your Calder Trophy winner, Jake Guentzel.
Yeah.
Rookie of the year of the playoffs.
Yes. Rookie of the year of the
Rookie of the year of the playoffs, yes. After two games.
No Austin Matthews.
After two games. No, after three games.
Yeah, see, he's had an unfair advantage because he had that extra
game. He has played an extra game all.
He's played 50% more games than everybody else in the runnings. That's not right.
7 of the 20 games in this postseason have gone to overtime, 13 decided by one goal. Playoff hockey.
Yeah, the overtime's been great. Almost every series has seen overtime at this point, so that's the best part of playoffs, playoff hockey. Anything else before we wrap it up here?
All right.
Okay.
With the Marian Hossa episode.
What news do you think we have created for tonight? Because something always happens based on what we said leading it. Like, is Chicago going to go out and win 6-0? Is Vancouver going to hire a coach? We've brought up a bunch of topics. Something's going to happen tonight.
We do set the agenda for the NHL.
It's true.
So just be aware of that as you listen to this.
Okay.
All right. For Jamie Eisner,
Craig Morgan. Scoring the game-winning goal tonight.
Do you want to give a shout-out to how people can listen to us?
Yeah, do that.
It still seems to be in question.
Yeah, so if you want to listen to us, search Natural Hat Trick on iTunes and Google Play. You can listen to us through there. Subscribe to us. You can also go on to fanragsports.com under the podcast section, and you can see all our podcasts, but particularly click on ours, Natural Hat Trick, and you can go from there. And from there, it'll direct you to Audio Boom, where it has every show we've ever done ever. So you can listen to all 81 of the episodes, which are more like 79 because I lost a couple, but we don't want to talk about that.
Conveniently
lost a couple. And then the one where Craig and Luke did from a hotel room in Las Vegas. Luke maybe, he had no ID, so I don't even know if it's him or not.
It was a great episode, though.
There's one episode they did in the dark. Maybe that was that episode.
In the bottles of Gila River.
No, that was an arena. With no light in the...
Weird things happen when I'm not on the show. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, well, that's on you.
By the way, if people want to ask questions that Luke will, in all likelihood, ignore...
I did forget to check the email this week.
Feel free to... you can send us an email. What's the email address?
The email is thenaturalhattrick@gmail.com.
Or they can do it on Twitter.
@thenattyhattie.
Do comments? Not send them to the country music singer Craig Morgan. He will not respond. He might respond. I don't know.
It'd be great if he did.
We will not respond to anything.
Probably direct you to me because we're tight.
The next time you're not on the show, we're getting him to replace you. So we don't have to say a different name because that's too much to ask.
And he would be actually special guest Craig Morgan.
Ooh, look at that. Taking your title. That's kind of rude.
That's why I like that Arizona Sports podcast.
Yeah, we're going out on a low note, but I enjoy
that. I brought up another brand on our air.
I know.
That's
shout out to Patreon.
I'm so editing that out. It's going to just sound odd.
Jamie stopped recording an hour ago.
That's all.
And just the end of the
We've got like 93 minutes already.
93 minutes. Wow, what else do you guys want to talk about? You got any vacations this summer? Okay.
Yeah.
For Jamie Eisner, Craig Morgan, I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.